Penguin Random House Audio presents After the Last Border, Two Families and the Story of Refuge in America by Jessica Godeau. Read for you by Sunila Nankani. To Muna, Husna, their family and friends scattered around the world, and the refugee resettlement community in Austin, with all my love. Where should we go after the last border? Where should birds fly after the last sky? Where should plants sleep after the last breath of air? Mahmoud Darwish, Earth Presses Against Us, translated by Munir Akash and Carolyn Forche. The world has got very good, very skilled and very adept, really, at spotting these great mass abuses of populations, but only from a distance of about 40 years. Up close, it's different. The thing about it is that it is happening now to real people. And the world, including and especially the world that could help, can't quite get the thing in focus. This is a question of moral right and international responsibility, and one from which neither the United States nor the rest of the industrial countries should be permitted to look away. Editorial about the Indo-Chinese humanitarian crisis and refugees. The Washington Post, June 22, 1979. Author's note. This book tells the stories of two women resettled through the Refugee Resettlement Program to the United States. Muna arrived in 2007 at the beginning of the program for refugees from Myanmar, one of the most successful and widely supported resettlement initiatives in U.S. history. Husna As-Salam arrived in 2016 with the first wave of Syrian refugees, during one of the greatest moments of upheaval since the establishment of the Federal Resettlement Program. I gathered the details of these stories through intensive interviews every 2 weeks or so over a period of 2 years. In addition, I had been friends with Muna for almost a decade when I began writing the book. The afterword provides a more in-depth look at our interview process and my methods in writing their narratives. At their request, and with their direct input, some identifying details, including names, have been changed to protect Muna, Husna, and their relatives and friends, many of whom are still in danger currently. This book is also the story of the American resettlement program itself, from its roots in the immigration debates at the end of the 19th century to its dismantling in 2019 at the hands of the government branch that once promoted and protected it. Refugee policy is not a single monolithic piece of legislation, but a series of programs and practices shaped by one of the most powerful forces in the American Republic, the will of the people. Too often we focus on the opportunities the U.S. provides immigrants in the land of the American dream, and not on how our mercurial national moods lead to small and large policy shifts that radically affect real people. Americans' national fight for identity, the wrangling about who we once were, how we will define ourselves for each generation, and who we want to become, is the single greatest determiner of who we accept for resettlement. After years of friendship with refugees, and countless hours of research into one of the most remarkable, if imperfect, federal programs, I have come to believe that refugee resettlement is a bellwether of our country's moral center. How we respond to the greatest humanitarian crises of our time reveals our nation's soul. Prologue. Muna. Myanmar-Thailand border, 1989. Muna is 5, and she is running. Thick, wet grass rises higher than her chubby thighs, and she lifts her legs as if she is marching, almost jumping to keep up with the frantic adults. Her mouth is silent, but her body makes noises because she hasn't learned yet how to run and hide well in the woods. Her mother is carrying her baby sister. Her toddler brother is with her aunt. Muna struggles valiantly, pushes back tall plants, breathes hard, but she cannot keep up. Her young uncle swings her up onto his shoulders, and she wraps her arms under his neck, lays her cheek on his head to keep it out of the way of slapping branches, and holds on. They run for 3 days. On the back trails in the mountains, they encounter another family. They are wary at first, but soon realize they are prey hunted by the same predators. They run together. There is safety in numbers. They pool what knowledge they have. Someone heard there are openings at a refugee camp across the river in Thailand. They set off in that direction. At night, in the darkness, in hushed voices, they share their stories. Muna overhears her young uncle whispering to another man about what happened. He had waited until his sister, Muna's beautiful aunt, was out of earshot to speak. Muna's beautiful aunt is married. She caught the eye of a soldier in the Tamada. Not just any soldier, a dangerous soldier with burnished stars on his green sleeve. Muna remembers a man with stars on his sleeve. From her uncle's whispers, she learns those stars probably mean he was a general in the Tamada, the Myanmar armed forces. The villagers are Karen, one of the many ethnic minorities that the Burmese junta is targeting on a variety of fronts. All over the country, everyone who is Karen, or Kachin, Kareni, Rohingya, Chin, or many of the other groups of people who are not ethnically Burmese, will run. Or they will think about running. Or they will wish they had been able to run. They will pour into camps in Malaysia and India and Thailand, depending on how the vicious scythe of war cuts through their villages and cities. When the scythe sliced through Muna's village, that general held it. Muna understands from her uncle's tone that the stars on the general's sleeve mean her aunt could not refuse. If she told him she loved her husband, if she said politely, with her eyes down respectfully and her teeth bared in an uncomfortable smile, that she would rather not. She and all of her relatives had better run the second he turned his back. Her aunt turned him down. Now Muna and her family are running. They love Muna's beautiful young aunt more than they love their village. Leaving is safer for now, but true safety does not exist in Myanmar. Muna's country is in freefall, a state of bewildering, breathtaking conflict. It feels as if everyone is fighting everyone. Families like Muna's, a Buddhist woman married to a Christian man, neither of whom wanted to fight, are caught in the crossfire from every side. Fleeing is hard on the children. They must be carried and cajoled and whispered to. It is hard on Muna's aging female relatives, all referred to as grandmother, with the deference and love she gives to all older women. It is hard on the young adults, jumping like rabbits at every sound in the forests, aching with fear for the children and the grandmothers, bearing the weight of packs bound in woven cloth with everything they can carry. It is hard on Muna's father. Years ago, his right leg was blown off by a landmine, and though his body has adjusted to the makeshift crutch he fashioned then from a branch, his back and arms ache as he pushes through the damp, sticky branches that cling to him and pull at him. Once, when they stop to rest, he tells Muna that the forest where he walked into a landmine was the same as this one, that she should stay close to him. As they walk again, she can see that sameness wears on him, warns him. He speaks sharply to his wife all day, But
sample complete. Ready to continue?